Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Kimberly Atkins. With 21 declared candidates now running for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020, we want to give you a chance to hear from and speak with as many of them as we possibly can. So it only makes sense to start with the first major Democrat to announce a 2020 run. Former Democratic Congressman John Delaney represented Maryland's 6th District from 2013 to 2019. He officially entered the presidential race in July of 2017. Choosing to pursue the White House instead of running for re-election to Congress. And he joins us now in studio. Congressman Delaney, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Boston.
Thanks for having me, Kimberly.
Listeners, we want to hear from you during this segment. What issues are most important to you in the 2020 election? What questions do you have for the candidates? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK or tweet us at Radio Boston. Now, Congressman, I want to start with a bit of today's news, the jobs report that came out. It's pretty positive, according to the figures released by the Labor Department. 263,000 jobs were created in April, which is higher than what was expected. The unemployment rate fell to 3.6%, the lowest it's been in 50 years. Now, the White House, of course, is trumpeting this news as proof that President Trump's economic policies are working. First of all, do you believe that he deserves the credit for the strong economic numbers?
Well, the economic numbers are strong. So, of course, at some level, he and President Obama both deserve the credit. I mean, what influences the economy is a lot of factors, right? I don't think the president's policies that he actually touts are having the impact on the economy that he says. But I do think there's a fair amount of business confidence right now that is causing companies to feel good about hiring, which is based on a whole variety of factors, you know, some of which have been playing out for quite a long time.
And this business confidence, if Americans are happy that that's happened, how do Democrats counter this message from President Trump that the economy is because of him and they should stay the course?
So I think what we have to say is, first of all, we should be happy that we have very good employment numbers, right? Because we want people to have jobs. Jobs are incredibly important. We don't need to talk about the reasons for that, including the fact that they give people dignity and a sense of purpose and self-worth. One of the issues with the data, though, is it doesn't really tell the whole story, because to some extent the problem in the economy right now is not really jobs as much as it's pay, because a lot of the jobs that are in these jobs numbers really don't pay enough, and it's making it very hard for most Americans to get by. According to the Federal Reserve, who put out this data last year, half of the American people can't afford $500. Mm. So if they wake up and something happens to their house or their car or their health care and it's $500, they don't have the savings or they don't have even the capacity on their credit card.
So,
and that's why so many people have two jobs or three jobs. And so there's a decent number of jobs, but increasingly a lot of the jobs that are getting created have really low pay. Workers don't benefit from the kind of benefits that they really need in many of these situations, and many workers are barely getting by.
So on the issue of income inequality, which is linked to the, mm-hmm. the wage issue that you're talking about, you call yourself a compassionate capitalist. Mm-hmm. How do you square that with how do you square your support for capitalism with this idea that there are these disparities economically in the country?
Well, I think we have to be clear-eyed about what capitalism is. Right. Capitalism creates jobs and it innovates. Right. The free market capitalistic system that this country have is probably the greatest innovation and job creation machine ever created. But if you look back at what we did historically, we had workers' rights. We had great societal infrastructure like good public schools, things like that. We had regulations and we had tax policy that allowed for the benefits of capitalism to be broadly shared. So to some extent, that was the genius of this country. We let capitalism work its magic, but we moderated it. We've really stopped moderating it in the last several, in many ways, decades to some extent. And that's why I think we have such inequality. For example, there's something there's a tax policy out there called the Earned Income Tax Credit. It used to be very bipartisan, right? It's a tax credit that hardworking Americans get, particularly if they're at the lower end of the pay scale. You have to work to get it. So it creates an incentive to work. That's something that should have been increased a long time ago. right? Things like that would make a real difference, right, in terms of how the economy is performing today, because we would still see these kind of hopefully good jobs numbers. But we know that the people on the other end of these numbers were actually either getting better pay or better tax breaks.
Now, when I get to the phones, Heidi is calling from Revere. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You're on with Congressman Delaney.
Hi. So I'm a public middle school teacher in Revere, Massachusetts, and I have a question about your stance on the student loan debt crisis. Being an educator, I want to send a positive message about higher education to my students, but feeling like I'm crushed by my loans myself, I want to know just your stance on that and what message I can tell my students about their future.
Thanks for the question, Heidi, and thanks for what you do, which is to educate the next generation of young people. I really admire that. And you all are under a lot of pressure these days because your job's gotten a lot tougher because public school teachers are asked to do a lot more than they have historically. You know, Heidi, there's a couple of issues. One, I think the rates on student loans are too high. Right now, the federal government makes a lot of money on student lending. And what I'd like to do is lower the rates so that the federal government breaks even on it. So that's one thing I think we need to do. The other thing I think we need to do is we need to have more programs that tie your repayment to your income. Right. So if you become a public school teacher or a school teacher and you have lower income than a software programmer in Silicon Valley, your payments will inherently be lower because it'll be tied to a percentage of your earnings. I think that's something we should do. I think we have to do things to make community college part of public education, meaning free. Either that or career and technical training, I think, should be part of public education. And that would alleviate the burden even for those kids who want to pursue a four-year degree because they could do 2 years of community college at no cost and then go to another 2 years to a four-year college. And if their student loan rates were lower, that would make education a lot more affordable.
Now, Senator Elizabeth Warren, a fellow 2020 candidate, is proposing debt forgiveness tied to income. What do you think of that proposal?
Well, I think – you know, the way I would do it is by having more refinance programs. First of all, there's two types of debts. There's private student debt and then there's public student debt, right? Private student debt, the federal government has really no ability to do anything with it because it's held privately. What the federal government can do is create refinancing programs that allow students to refinance into federal loans at lower rates and at more attractive repayment programs like what I just talked about. So that's what I'm in favor of because I think that'll impact positively more kids.
All right. Galen is calling from Newton. Hi, Galen.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. It's great to hear you, Congressman Delaney.
Thanks, Galen.
I was wondering what your thoughts are and whether you have a stance on what Democrats should do to energize voters similarly to what Republicans did in 2016 when it came to the Supreme Court. I've heard several candidates talk about the possibility of announcing a slate of candidates preemptively, like who we would nominate. Do you think that's an effective strategy? It's one of my top concerns going forward, certainly, given how long they're on the bench.
Yeah, no, I think – and listen, I think people like myself think these Supreme Court justices shouldn't be – on the bench for as long as they are. I think we should have some term limits for these people because it's made this appointment to the Supreme Court kind of a 40-year appointment, which makes it a lot more consequential than it should be. I would be in favor of things like 18-year terms for Supreme Court justices. You know, the president announced a slate of potential Supreme Court appointees, and that did get Republicans energized. So it worked for him. The problem is it's very hard to say, okay, who you're going to appoint to the court 2, 3, 4 years from now. I think what's important is that our nominees make it very clear the type of people we're going to appoint. It's got to be people who want to actually protect people, right, and are in favor of people as opposed to corporations. I think we ought to make it very clear that we're going to appoint people who are going to protect some of the rights that we've fought so hard for in the last several decades. You know, things like marriage equality, and you can go down the list. So I think it's my preference, rather than putting a list of individuals, is actually to talk about the type of people that I would appoint to the court. But I also think we should have a discussion about whether these terms should be lifetime appointments. But the other point to make that I do think is relevant is in many ways we've allowed the Supreme Court to become way too important in this country. And what I mean by that is because Congress is so dysfunctional, too many things are being decided by the Supreme Court and through executive authority. Meaning our broken Congress has created a situation that presidents with executive authority try to effectively legislate, and the court is asked to confront a lot of questions they shouldn't be dealing with. For example, the court was asked to decide whether carbon is actually, or greenhouse gases are things that can be regulated under the Clean Air Act.
Right.
That shouldn't be a question for the Supreme Court. That should be decided by legislation, meaning we should pass laws that deal with climate change and global warming, as opposed to effectively abdicating these responsibilities, which is why one of the reasons a big part of my candidacy is actually getting our government working again. Mm-hmm. Because our government is so broken, we've effectively put ourselves in a position where a combination of the executive branch and the court are actually doing the legislating in this country.
I also want to remind our listeners that they can call in and talk with John Delaney, 2020 Democratic candidate, at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to talk about health care.
Sure.
When I'm talking to voters, that's usually one of the first
top
words
issue
that they say. More Democrats have started to embrace Medicare for all, including Senator Bernie Sanders. And I know that's not something that you support. How do you deal with rising health care costs, inadequate coverage, lack of access to treatment without Medicare for All?
So I think Medicare for All, that specific bill, because when people say Medicare for All, what they're referring to is a specific piece of legislation. I actually think that piece of legislation will make access to health care more limited and won't do anything to control health care costs and in many ways may reduce quality. I am for universal health care. In other words, I am for every single American having health care as a basic right of citizenship. I think it's a basic human right. I think in 2019, when you consider how advanced we are as a society and a world, everyone should have health care as a right. I also think it's smart economic policy. I mean, I think it's crazy that so many Americans are shackled to their job because of their health care. They may want to get a better job or start a business or do these things. But I just think this notion that the government should be the only payer of health care would actually result in worse health care. And I'll tell you why I believe that is because if you look at the data right now, Medicaid, which is the largest health care program in this country, only pays 80% of cost. So if Kimberly, if you and I were running a hospital and we only took Medicaid, we'd lose 20%, which means we'd close. Medicare only pays 95% of cost, and commercial insurance pays about 115 or 120% of cost. So there's no evidence to suggest that if the government was the only payer that it would ever pay cost, and that would result in more limited access. And just to make the point, when I go around rural America, I always visit a rural hospital, and I always ask the administrator, if last year all of your commercial insurance bills were paid by Medicare, what would happen? And they all say the same thing. We would close. So my point there is we should have universal health care as a right, and I have a plan to do it. But it should be a mixed model where people can also get supplementals or buy additional private options. That will lead to a healthier health care marketplace.
And just to get to the point, I want to get to more callers in the short time we have left. But you also say health insurance should not be tied to employment. But how do you accomplish that? I mean, I had to sign up to the federal health care exchange at some point for several years, and I stopped going to the doctor because it was so expensive.
Yeah.
How do you accomplish that?
So the way I would do it is I would give everyone a basic health care package as a right. Right? You get that from when you're born to when you're 65. When you're over 65, you go to Medicare. It's your basic plan, and it would have minimum benefits similar to what's in the Affordable Care Act, and your co-pays would be tied to your income, so it would be means tested. But then individuals would have options. They could buy supplemental plans, just like Medicare beneficiaries do. So you'd end up with this kind of mixed model healthcare where everyone has a basic government plan, so they're always covered, right? And if they're low income, they don't have copays. If they have higher incomes, they do. And then they can actually go and buy additional options in the market.
All right. Joe is calling from Westwood. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Quick question I'd like some comment on, which is there's now 21 candidates on the Democratic side. And for most Democrats, the main goal is making sure that the election is won by a Democrat. Let's be honest here.
Yep.
And so what I'd like a comment or thoughts on what's going to happen to prevent those 21 candidates from essentially killing any possibility for a Democrat winning the presidential race in 2020, which is partly what happened in 2016 that resulted with Trump being in office. And is there any potential for the current running candidates to get together as a group and decide, we don't want to do that. We want to choose the front leader amongst us and avoid that problem.
Joe,
thank
you for that question. I mean, there's 21. There could be a few more that get in.
Yeah. So, Joe, I think we need a real debate of ideas. I don't think it should be a very negative campaign. I don't think we should be attacking each other. I don't attack anyone. I tell people what I'm going to do for them and what my ideas are because I got a lot of new ideas. And that's what we really need. In many ways, what we had in 2016 was the opposite of that. We didn't have a big field. We didn't have a real debate. I think most Democrats settled very quickly either in Secretary Clinton's camp or Senator Sanders' camp. Right. And so I'm actually for kind of the opposite of that, which is you, the voters, I'm assuming you're a Democrat, Democratic voter. You should hear all of our ideas and you should make the decision about who's got the best ideas. That's the best way for us to put up the person who will beat Donald Trump, because I agree with you. The most important thing by any measure, is for Democrats to win in 2020.
Now, just one more question about the minute we have left. You said that only a moderate on the
Democratic side
can beat Donald Trump. Why do you think that?
Because I think President Trump is going to turn out his voters in huge numbers, and I think Democrats are going to turn out in huge numbers. We saw that in the midterms in 2018. In 435 districts around this country, whether the person was a socialist or a moderate, whether they were young or older, whether they were white or a person of color, woman, man, straight, gay, no matter what, we ran this amazingly diverse field of candidates all across the country, and we saw record turnout. And so I believe in 2020, no matter which one of the 20 of us who are running have the privilege of having the nomination, I think Democrats are energized and will turn out. And I think President Trump's going to turn out his voters. So that tells me this election's going to be fought in the center.
That's former Maryland Congressman and 2020 Democratic primary candidate John Delaney. Congressman Delaney, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Kimberly.